Hello, and welcome to Classy Critics. I'm Pepper, and my co-host is Salt. So today we're going to be talking about Gone with the Wind. More like Gone with the 89 or so hours it takes to read this book. You are wasting a week of your life if you do not like the story. So just think on that. Any other comments on that?
Not really, just it takes forever to read.
In layman's terms, yes, it's a very long book. If you don't like long books, do not read this. It is over 900 pages, and it's a great book, but too long.
This book has lots of interesting characters, and so we're going to introduce those. So, the main protagonist is Scarlett O'Hara. How old is she when the book starts?
She is probably in her early teens, mid-teens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't explicitly remember her exact age, but she's in her teenager, so kind of hormones are going crazy. She's definitely in the boy crazy section of her life.
That kind of lasts throughout her life.
Yes, but you also must keep in mind, this book doesn't encompass 30 years of her life. Mm-hmm. Most of the time where she's kind of going boy crazy, it is still in that part of her life where she's young. And that explains a lot of her behavior, which we'll get to later.
So, Scarlett is very egotistical, and she's very impulsive. She doesn't have a lot of shame. And she is very manipulative, which is part of the boy crazy personality thing she's got going on there.
Yeah, she's kind of trying to get every guy within a 500, 1,000 mile radius of her to just follow her around like a little puppy. She treats them like they're toys. When she's done playing with one, she puts it down, and she expects it to stay there while she plays with another, and if it leaves, she's like, where'd my toy go? You stole my toy. I'm going to get it back. She's just kind of a jerk. She doesn't really care what other people think of her. She definitely doesn't care what the other females think of her. All she wants is the attention of the guys. I don't think she mentions a single friend that's a girl.
She really doesn't. She's even kind of working against her sisters in the book. She steals her little sister's,
Bow.
Yeah.
Bay.
Yeah.
She steals her baby. And I mean, not baby, but like baby, like boy.
So she really doesn't.
They've been flirting for a while, too.
I know. She doesn't really care about girls, like even her own family.
She stabs pretty much every girl in the town in the back.
Yeah, she has this need to have guys like her, and she's very good at it, too, because she's actually very intelligent, which again helps with manipulating people, but she comes off as dumb, which was kind of, unfortunately, an attractive quality then.
Yeah, so she's kind of got these two sides conflicting this whole time. There's a side of her who is manipulative and smart and just kind of unashamed of who she is, but she knows that's not what she's supposed to be, so she hides that side with the other side, which is kind of caused by her upbringing, which is proper and kind of the perfect Southern Belle side. I kind of think of those as her Irish side and her Southern side, because throughout the whole book, anytime anybody's really angry, which is usually Scarlett or her father, they reference the fact that they have Irish blood in them, and it's like their Irish blood is churning. So I just think of her reckless side as being like her Irish side, because her father's reckless too, and he's the Irish part of it. And then the Southern Belle would be her mother, who's from...
Yeah. Her side is rougher.
And she's from, like, the aristocracy of Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
She's supposed to be all proper, kind of like me, as you can tell by my voice. And it's just kind of, those are the two sides that are fighting for control throughout this entire book. And she kind of just puts on this mask of being a stupid airhead.
Yeah.
And that time she kind of lets the mask get a little thinner, takes it off for a minute or two, but it's almost always present when she's around others.
And even though she's very egotistical, she's also very self-aware, and like she knows what she's doing at all times because she has this need to be in control.
Yeah. One perfect example of just her ego kind of going with the guy crazy part is when she says on page 959, if you have your books, she could get Rhett back. She knew she could. There had never been a man she couldn't get once she set her mind upon him. I just think that's a huge ego trip right there, saying, I can get whatever man I want, whenever I want. Doesn't care.
There's confidence there, but a little bit too much.
Yeah.
To be healthy.
There's confidence, and then there's just kind of being a little bit of a Richard.
Yeah, it also shows that her success again, because she is very good at this. She's very good at manipulating people and, like, kind of getting them on her side. So she's very independent and headstrong, and we see a lot of that and, like, her self-reliance throughout the book.
And she's called out on it, too. Rhett says to her in chapter 68, "You're so cruel to those who love you, Scarlet. You take their love and hold it over their hands like a whip." She stabs everyone in the back. It doesn't matter what connection she has to them or what they've done to deserve it. She's just a jerk. She's been Richard.
So should we move on to Rhett?
Let's move on to Rhett, which I personally love talking about because I think he's really just an extension of Scarlet's character. He's really, truly the reckless side of her.
Yeah.
He is what Scarlet would be if she could. It's just her Irish... Southern mother holding her back.
He's one of the other main characters in this book, and they are, flirting, and then they're together for a good bit, and he kind of leaves her at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, he leaves with, "My dear, I don't give a damn."
Yeah, because it's kind of an iconic line.
Yeah, she took pretty much the whole book to realize she was flat out in love with him. I mean, I can't remember the page number, but I remember in my reading, there's a part where she literally says, "I've been thinking about him so much, it's almost like I love him, but there's no possible I could love him." That's in, like, chapter 15 or something. There's 54 chapters.
Yeah.
She takes almost the entire book just to realize she loves him, and he's the only one she's ever truly wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, "You know what? No, I've been waiting years for you to realize this. We're married, we've been married, and you're just now realizing this. I don't care anymore. I've wasted too much of my time on you."
She only realizes it because he threatens to leave, and that's what gets her to be like, "Oh, wait, I don't want that to happen."
Yeah. And he's the only one throughout the entire book who calls her out on what she's doing. He calls her, on page 198, a delicately nurtured Southern belle with her Irish up. He recognizes that she has that kind of prim, proper side to her, but that really she's Irish, and she gets angry, and she gets mad. I mean, he says to her, on 68, "I think you're still a child. No one but a child could be so headstrong and so insensitive."
Yeah, he's one of the only characters who can, because he himself is very similar to her character, so he sees, like, how she's manipulative and how she can be selfish and reckless, but, like, that's kind of what attracts him to her, because, like, Rhett symbolizes the traits that she has to hide, and so, like, they're attracted to each other because it's kind of like, "You're the only person I've found that's so like me," and that's why they like each other.
On page 222, he's describing to her kind of why he likes her and flirting with her a bit, and he says, "I think we agreed on the occasion of our first meeting that you were no lady at all." And he's doing this amidst flirting with her, so it's obvious that he likes her, and he likes that she's not a lady. He likes that she's not some dumb airhead.
Yeah.
He hates when she puts on airs of being a dumb airhead, and he calls her on it. He'll give her little hints and wiggles his eyebrows.
Yeah, and it's like a challenge for her, because most people can't see through this kind of front that she puts up. And because he can, like, it's frustrating, but, like, it's also exciting for her to find someone that's so alike.
Because he has no shame.
Mm-hmm.
She calls him out on being a coward, a manipulative person, and saying, and referencing his past where he really dishonored a girl. And he just takes it. He says, "You can't make me mad by calling me names that are true."
Yeah,
she says that, page 223.
Mm-hmm. She's so used to manipulating people and, like, having her hurt, that when she can't really hurt him, like, it's very different for her.
It angers her. She's annoyed that she can't lord his need to have a good reputation over his head like she can with pretty much everybody else in the book.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's a very interesting character. He's very blunt and honest and impulsive, and he's kind of like the classic, like, dark bad boy character of the book who's the only one who kind of gets her.
The contrast is the other main love interest for Scarlet is Ashley.
Yeah.
Ashley is the stereotypical boy next door. He's perfect at all he does. He's good at sports, which in this case would be hunting and horseback riding.
Yeah.
But the difference between Ashley and everybody else in this society is his heart's
very,
not in it.
Yeah, he's very quiet and passive, and he's, throughout the book, like, instead of really being involved in what's happening, he's more into, like, the drama, like, the tragic romance of it, and he over-romanticizes things. like a very good amount. So.
Yeah, some have described him in a way where they say he lives inside his head instead of outside in the world, and he hates to come out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Said that page 215, and I think that describes him perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
He spends all of his time reading poetry and reading books, and in his letters to his wife, they're not letters of love and lust like most of the other gentlemen. He's talking about events and his thoughts, and Scarlett finds it kind of boring, but it's not boring for Ashley, because what he wants to talk about is the poets and authors he's reading and how it affects the world around him and the world he's in. We get a lot of perspective on politics through the eyes of Ashley.
But the thing about Ashley is that he's so wrapped up in this that he's just kind of stuck there, and he's not really doing anything to change what's happening. So
he kind of just plays the role that's been put in front of him.
Yeah, and the two kind of, they show Scarlett's two sides, because on one side she's very kind of wild and different, and then on the other side, and you know, this side isn't shown as much, but she does know like how to be proper, and this is what she shows to the world. I guess she shows a good amount of both sides, really.
I would say we, as the readers, get to see her reckless side a bit more, because she generally doesn't say her thoughts out loud.
Yeah, and then the world sees her proper side.
The world sees more of her proper side.
Yeah.
And that kind of flows into our next topic, which is Aunt Pitypat, who is always trying to bring out the proper side.
She's kind of what Scarlett is supposed to be.
Yeah, she's the ideal Southern woman. She's quiet, she's easily persuadable, she's constantly fading in the book.
You could say she's better suited for the kitchen.
Yeah, she just kind of stays at home, and she's okay with that. She's happy just doing needlepoint and enjoying her chit-chat with the ladies. She helps in the hospital, she organizes dances. She follows the moral code and the time you have to grieve, and she's constantly just kind of dismissing the fact that Scarlett's not that way, just coming up with an excuse for why she is the way she is. She's sweet. She's a great hostess. She has opinions, but she doesn't voice them. She's what she's supposed to be.
And classic, but that's kind of the point of her character, is to be kind of boring and kind of fade into the background, because at the time, that's what women were supposed to be, and that's what men wanted in women, was them to be quiet and just go in the kitchen and just make food and clean up the house.
Yeah, she's supposed to show how different Scarlett is by being what she's supposed to be.
Yeah, because she was very different from the way society worked at that time, and some people liked that, like Rhett, and then some people, it kind of freaked them out, like Aunt Pitypat.
So. Yeah. And that kind of goes also with Ellen, who is also, she gives on the air of being the perfect woman, but her heart is not in it. She's very much like Scarlett. She had a love that she could not have, and it broke her.
Yeah,
I mean,
she kind of became a shell of who she once was, because this man that she loved is actually her cousin, but it was actually, unfortunately, very common at that time for cousins to marry each other, but he went to the war and he died, and it kind of messed her up.
Well, he didn't exactly go to the war. He was sent off by her family.
Mm-hmm.
They killed him.
Yeah.
In her mind, which was horrible, because she was in love with him, and they knew that, and they just didn't like him, so they sent him away, and he died, and she blamed him for it. And as kind of spite, she ran off with an immigrant who had very low social ranking, and in the aristocracy of Savannah, that was not really heard of often. But it's kind of interesting because she shares these qualities with Scarlett, but she's so different because Scarlett is impulsive and reckless, and Ellen, throughout the whole book, seems to radiate wisdom and common sense. She's the only one who really seems to see things for what they are.
Yeah, she's very, kind of, like, grounded, especially to her husband. Like, he really relies on her. But you can't help but notice that she's just not really all there. Like, some of her is missing just because of how hard her life used to be before she got away from it.
Yeah. And she's really made a home for herself at Tara, and Scarlett shares that as her home. Tara's the one place where she always seems to kind of go back to, and she always seems to go back with a happy heart. She's happy to be back, as much as she tries to get away from it throughout the book and going to places like Atlanta. It's her home, it's where she was built, and the whole thing about her Irish blood is it's land ownership and happiness in owning that land.
And that place is kind of the one constant in her life, and like you'd think she has more, but she really doesn't, because her family at the end, they're kind of all dead and gone. Her, Rhett kind of leaves, her daughter dies. And so it's kind of the one thing she has. And it also shows how hard she worked to get it. And it kind of, like, if she wasn't so boy crazy, she could have done great things because she was able to, like, almost all on her own, kind of save the place and make it really great. But she was just so boy crazy that she, you could say that she kind of wasted a lot of her life, like, just chasing after people.
Instead of just staying where she was and making the most of it, which is what people were expected to do at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've kind of hinted at throughout the book, and as we're going to flat out say right now, is one of the main struggles throughout this book is individual versus society.
Mm-hmm.
And Scarlett is a part of that theme in that she is so focused on being herself and doing what she wants to do, and it's me, 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 me,
mm-hmm.
that she kind of is working against society, which is all focused on what can I do to build what my family's already done, what can I do to build upon this, what can I do to help the war effort. And it's all kind of focused on community. There's bonfires and parties all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You find a husband, you make a family, you create a little community for yourself. And all she's wanting is everybody to follow her, to do what she wants to do, to be there at her beck and call.
She's very self-dependent, and while that can be good, we see this thing throughout a lot of the characters in this book, actually, who rely too much on themselves, and it ends up being their downfall. So that's a little rough, because she just relies on herself so much, and it's so different, especially for a woman at that time, that, you know, some people judge her for it, because they think that she needs a man's help to do what she's doing.
Yeah, which is why she wanted to leave Tara, I think, a bit, because at that point it was out in the country, it was kind of more contemporary as opposed to big cities like Atlanta were getting more liberal.
Yeah.
Which is why when she went to Atlanta, she was so excited because it was buzzing, it was crazy, there was people everywhere. When she first gets there on around page 154, she describes it, the little town was gone and the face of the rapidly growing city was animated with never-ceasing energy and bustle. The sight of so much hurrying made Scarlett, fresh from the royal leisure and quiet, almost breathless. But she liked it. There was an exciting atmosphere about the place that uplifted her. It was as if she could actually feel the accelerated, steady pulse of the town's heart beating in time with her own. She was excited, it was energetic, it was constantly changing, there was boys coming in and out because of the war effort and because of the hospitals, there was always something to do, there was always someplace to go, there was people to talk to. It was new and exciting and young.
You can really relate it back to Scarlett because they're very similar. They're both very unique and they stand out, especially in the society of that time, because at the time, again, you know, you're not really supposed to stand out, you're supposed to kind of blend into the background, especially women, because it's not proper if they're loud and outspoken.
And that was just what made the place appeal to her, because mm-hmm. she could stand out. She got away with a lot more. She got to do dancing and parties and stuff, and she liked that.
So the last thing is the purpose of the book.
Because that's a huge part of why you read this book. And you can't write a book for 900 pages and read a book for 900 pages and there not be some kind of purpose for it.
Yeah, and it's actually it had a big impact. And, you know, that's why it's still relevant today, because it's very different and very important, especially when it was written. Especially for a woman.
Oh, yes, because one of the big things is it's in the Civil War era, and most of the time, looking back, we see it from the winner's view, from the Union. We learn about, oh, the Confederates were bad, they were allowing slavery, it was horrible. But that's not the only side of the story. This whole book is set in the South. It tells the story of the South. There are other things a part of their lives other than slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, there's parties, there's people. It's really humanizing the Confederacy and reminding people we weren't, like, all bad. It's like what happens with Hitler. Everybody forgets that not everyone in Germany was okay with what was going on. Many of the soldiers were just doing what they had to because it was their country that was fighting the war, not Hitler, not a regime that was killing a bunch of Jews. Many of them didn't even know what was going on in these camps. They just They were doing their part for the country. And it's just like that in the South. They were fighting for what they believed was their country. They were fighting for the people that were beside them, their brothers and sisters. It wasn't about, I want to enslave an entire race of people. It was, I'm really protecting my country, protecting the place I live in. I'm standing up for what I live, where I live. I'm fighting for the people that are right next to me, my neighbors, my brothers, my sisters. I want to protect them.
And the book really goes beyond that and kind of shows behind the scenes and, like, not just the soldiers and, like, the guns and the bombs, but also, like, the impact that the war had on their families, because a lot of, you know, kind of messed up and it broke a lot of their families, and a lot of horrible things happened to them because of the war and, like, all the terrible things it did to the people who weren't fighting in it.
And it was also a big movement in the literary period of the time, because this book came out about 1935 was when it first came out. Yeah. And the amendment that had given women the right to vote had only come out in 1920. Yeah. So women were still trying to gain traction in the way of getting rights, because the housewife stereotype was still around till the 1960s. It did not change immediately. Mm-hmm. And Scarlett is a female protagonist who kind of holds the center of the story around for 900 pages.
Yeah, and it's very uncommon for females to be the protagonist then. And like,
it's huge. Yeah. 900 pages.
Especially from the focus more on, like, the guys, but also, like, because while the book is very focused on the guys, it kind of had to be, because at the time, you needed a husband and you needed a father to get anywhere in life.
But it shows a character from the women's perspective. It has the women's thoughts. A good, like, 50-60% is just Scarlett's thoughts.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the housewife stereotype is women don't have thoughts. And Scarlett isn't out there looking for a husband. The only person she really goes for in the beginning when she's courting all these boys is Ashley. She only wants one man for her husband, but she still wants all these guys flocking around her. She's really kind of objectifying men, which is completely opposite from what was going on at the time, where women were the objects. And so I think that's just so cool how different it is from what is going on, and it really just kind of was one to stick it to the men at the time.
And just focused a lot on her complex feelings and her thoughts, which was very good, because women were kind of presented as this
2D figure in a 3D world.
Yeah, and so it kind of showed that, like, they also have a very important place, like, more than just being in the kitchen, because they're real people too. So it was a very important book at the time. But,
yeah. Well, I think that's all of the thoughts we had, and we see we're getting close on time here, and we'll just want to wrap it up, and we'll see you again next time on Classy Critics.
Yeah.
Bye.